two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Of Roots Charter School. It's an incredible school that is dedicated to at-risk students who have had struggles in other schools, and they are providing a great place for them to thrive. Hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's get proximate. We are here at on First Lady and Friends. We are back, and we have an incredible guest today. People that I just met and had an incredible experience at their organization. And their names are Tyler Bastian and Dan Caffey from Roots Charter School. We had such a great tour. You guys were awesome. And I just had to have you on to talk about the amazing things that you're doing and your students and everything that's going on. So let's talk about, we'll get into Roots Charter School, but let's first talk about Tyler and Dan. Let's talk about you. Let's talk about where you began. Did you grow up here? Where did you grow up? Tell me about your families. Let's get into it.
Do you want me to, I'll go first. I grew up in California till I was 12. My family moved here in 1989. That kind of tells you how old I am. And we ended up living in Sandy and then moved to Draper. I went to Alta High School, graduated in 95. Never thought I would go into education. Started a business after I got home from Honduras and did that for 12 years and sold the business and then became a teacher, which was a huge transition for me. I loved to teach. Originally, I was teaching LDS Seminary. That was not for me. And so I went into public education, started teaching documentary filmmaking. Pretty quickly, I realized kids didn't need to have a teacher to do film. They could YouTube, they could do different things, and they could teach themselves. So I started actually teaching character development. I saw a huge gap in kids really understanding how to get along with each other, how to manage emotions, how to control themselves, really. And so started teaching that, found a lot of success with it. The kids really liked it, but felt like it needed to be like, I felt the need to do something bigger on a larger scale. So in 2015, well, a lot prior to 2015, we started in about 2013, started the process of opening Roots Charter High School, wrote the charter, got it approved. And then in 2015, we opened the school. And Dan came on in about 2016.
I think so.
I'll let you.
So where did you start out, Dan?
So I grew up in Washington, D.C. area in Maryland and came out here for college a long time ago. And I've been out here on and off ever since. I've lived in different places, but have had a home here, a base in Utah for, you know, probably 25 years. And so I met Tyler in Honduras. We were missionaries, and we, you know, he was out a little before me, but we stayed in touch a little bit on Facebook, and I'd reconnected over a film he was making, a documentary film about a guy that we knew in Honduras, and then he reached out one day and said, you know, I've got this charter school that I started, and it's a farm-based school, and my first thought was, what do you know about? What do you know about schools or farms? What is this? We hadn't kept him that close to touch. And I thought, all right. He said, and he invited me to come out for a career day and speak to the students. And I said, yeah, that'd be great. I'd love to. I want to see what this is all about. And so I went out, did a little presentation for the students, and then did a tour of the school and went and saw the farm and got to talk with some of these students. And I was just blown away by the mission of the school and what, you know, as I sat down with Tyler and some of the other folks on the board about the challenges that they were facing. And I was just really, really impressed. And so they asked me to join the board, and then I became the board chair pretty soon after that. And I've been working with Tyler since. So a few years now.
Let's go back. You said, I mean, you kind of went quickly through the process of starting it, but let's go back to the idea. Why did you feel the need to start this school? And then, you know, what kind of precipitated that? And then let's talk about, you mentioned farm-based. Let's talk about, you know, how this came about.
So school was not, I hated school, just being totally honest. All my kids hate school too, so it must be genetic. But school for me was traumatic, mainly because I have pretty bad ADHD. And so sitting in classrooms, doing those things was really difficult. I never would have thought that I would end up as an educator. Learned to love, when I lived in Honduras, learned to love teaching and really found a passion for teaching and speaking. And that kind of is what drove me into education. And I was definitely, I don't want to say disappointed, but I was pretty flabbergasted, I guess, is a better word for disappointed. But I was definitely disenchanted. I was discouraged when I saw kind of what education can become, if that makes sense. And the school, I love the school I was at, but you start to see that there's so many kids that are just falling through the cracks like crazy. And so for me, I started to recognize my personality was such, and the subjects that I taught, my class was filling with kids from this school that were all pretty naughty, mm-hmm. You know, for lack of better description. And I loved them. Like, I really love kids that are loud and fun and mischievous. And so seeing that they didn't have any other place at that school except for my classroom kind of was quite a bit of the motivator. The farm really came because I read a book called Last Child in the Woods years ago, and really seeing that a lot of the kids spend no time outside. They're very disconnected from where their food comes from like what's real in the world, they're disconnected from. And they're so virtual. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it definitely can cause quite a few problems. And so for me, the farm became just kind of that motivator to get them outside and to get them to kind of see something real, you know, and to watch a kid, you know, to see a kid watching the birth of an animal is transformative for both the kid and for the teachers that are watching them watch that experience. And so the farm, really, I went to visit some schools, two of them. One was in California, and then actually went to visit three schools, one in California, two back east. Both of them have a farm component, and then came back and thought, that is really what I want to do. And so bringing that here to Utah was kind of what we planned. The school originally, like way back in when we first went to start it, was going to be an entrepreneurial school, mainly because of my background. And real quick, that changed when I saw kind of that transformative effect of being outside. Mm-hmm. And really seeing that nature. In the book, it calls it nature deficit disorder. And so that there's that nature, there's a deficit in their lives of really seeing nature.
That's incredible. Dan, what did you see when you first visited? Were you seeing this vision at first, or did it take a while to sort of catch on to what they were doing, buy in, or how was that?
So my background, I'm a startup entrepreneur. And so part of that is being able to see a vision before it's completely obvious. And so I was able to see it pretty quickly. Just the potential and the importance of what they were doing. You know, the story of the farm is really interesting. So it was an abandoned kind of field, and Tyler knows the whole story. He was there, but it was an abandoned field. It was filled with trash. It was kind of a blight on the neighborhood. It was just there as part of where there's radio towers. They have to have a clear area. So it just ended up filling up with trash. And the idea was basically, let us turn it into a nice farm and transform the neighborhood. So Tyler was able to do a deal, and they turned it into started operating as a farm, brought in animals and these things. It wasn't quite, you know, the transformation wasn't quite complete yet the first time. And I'll say I didn't bring my kids out there for the first year or two. I was worried they might get tetanus or something else. But you could see the vision. You could feel that this was going to be something really, like Tyler said, transformative for these kids. And you were just there a few weeks ago. Going there now and seeing what it's really become is just it's amazing. I mean, you go out and you see these kids, like Tyler said, who there's some nature deficit, and they're out there, kids with some really rough, difficult backgrounds, and they're out there, you know, cuddling with chickens and holding the baby goats and connecting with nature and learning how to nurture these animals. And that's something that is great for the kids. But like Tyler said, I mean, it's great for me. I'd never watched animals give birth. I don't know. Yeah. You know, it was really interesting. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was probably awash in nature growing up. I was the opposite. I mean, I grew up on a farm. I was probably 12 when I pulled my first lamb. I mean, meaning help the ewe give birth. So, I mean, this is part of who I am. So that's why when I went out there, I so connected with it. But even my own kids have not had those kinds of experiences before, which I think is really incredible. What kind of changes do you see maybe right away when they start really getting into the animals? Are you seeing, I mean, for a lot of people, when I was a kid and I would take people to the farm that didn't really have experience, there's some shocking aspects to what you do on a farm sometimes. And maybe yours is a little, you know, more mild than what we do. But I mean, you're doing some things that you don't see on the Nature Channel, and you don't see, you know, when you just have a dog or a cat at home. I don't know how to explain it other than it's very real. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of death. There's a lot of maybe things that you're not used to. Castration, all those fun things that we did on the farm. So are your kids, are they shocked by this? Are you doing these kinds of things, or is it kind of more mild?
We do them. I mean, for me, it's like I want to give them as real. They have so little, like I said, that's real in their life. Give them, you know, as real an experience as we can. One quick story: we had a sow that was delivering piglets, and genetically, the kids had artificially inseminated, and they had artificially inseminated the sow with genetically a boar that was too big, mm-hmm. And so when these piglets were trying to be born, they physically couldn't come out, and so. Watching these kids, you know, the kids were rallying around this pig. Everybody's trying to, you know, figure out what to do. We brought a vet in and everybody, and we ended up losing, I think, all the piglets, and the sow ended up dying. And the kids, to experience that is something that is how you develop an appreciation for life. You know, we wonder why, you know, kids can do terrible things to each other. They can hurt each other. They can kill each other. They don't understand the value of life. Yeah. Where on a farm, if you let it be real, they really start to value life because they're like, I loved something and it died. And it died from no cause, from anything. It died. And so for us, we're very vocal to the point where some kids drives them crazy. We'll tell them like, hey, in lunch today, you ate this animal. And we say the name and the kids are like, don't do that. I'm like, we have to do that. You have to understand what this process is. And it starts, the kids, they're craving that. They're craving like, what is life about? How do I figure this out? And the farm shows them what life's about and shows them this. if we were to sanitize it and make it be like, you know, I won't name names, but farms that are like public farms that are very like sanitized. Hollywood sanitized, we wouldn't be getting the same, the kids wouldn't have the same experience, and they wouldn't be learning what they're learning with the ups and downs that they learn now.
There's a lot of, again, based on my personal experience, there's a lot of natural consequences when it comes to nature and the farms, because I remember, and I've told this story publicly, but I remember having a horse who, you know, had colic, and I was supposed to go feed it. I thought for sure I killed it, but I didn't, because I, you know, I'm a kid, and I tried to get out of not, you know, out of doing my chores, and she ended up dying. You know, come to find out, it wasn't my fault. She did have colic, but at the same time, like, if you don't take your responsibility, you literally will, you could kill an animal by not, you know, not being responsible for taking care of them if you're not, you know, doing what you know, and it, you know, in a lot of ways that you just can't learn lessons like that any other way. I mean, it, with my own kids, it's like, well, if they don't, you know, practice the piano, or if they don't do their, okay, what? I'm going to have to impose some kind of, you know, punishment or whatever. But these are real natural consequences for your choices. Mm-hmm. And I think it's beautiful. Let's continue this conversation. We have so much to talk about, the way the school's going, the way you're running things, and what's ahead in the future. And we'll do that when we come right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope in Darkness on KSLpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back here with Dan and Tyler from Roots Charter School. We are talking about natural consequences, the things that these kids are learning about the farm, through the farm, through the farm process. Let's talk a little bit about the kinds of kids that you're generally seeing at Roots, and how you're, and talk a little bit about your 2-4-3 approach.
So our students, we really target and we're chartered to go after kids that are disengaged, that have either dropped out or are credit deficient or are about to drop out. So we that's most of our students are from that situation where they've been kicked out of a school or they just got to where they quit going. A couple of our students, like, they're on like their third time. And when they come to Roots, they've dropped out three times, you know, left, come back, left, come back. And so it's really at risk population, at risk of not graduating, is what they're kind of labeled in the system, I guess, for lack of better terms. But then at the same time, it's a school where both my oldest went there and graduated from Roots. And so one was at risk of not graduating. I hope he doesn't listen to this. But the other one was just didn't like school. She did great, but she just hated it. And so it's a mix, but most of our students, I'd say most of them are students who are disengaged and dropped out or just about to drop out. So we have a lot of credit recovery, a lot of kids coming and they're trying to make up credits. And then the 2-4-3, I'll tell a little story how that came to be. So when we first started, the first 3 years, we averaged 7 suicide attempts every school year. Mm. And it got to the point after, you know, a couple years where I was like, I can't, emotionally, mentally, I was like, I can't do this. And so we took the summer and we really kind of thought about, okay, what causes that self-harm, but what leads to it? And how do you break the cycle? How do you intervene? It's not it's not enough to have a week and just say, we're going to talk about it this week or this month or whatever. But how our goal really was, how do you create a culture where the kids know that they have that anchor? They know they have something that they can draw upon when they're feeling that they're in that, you know, in that place mentally and emotionally. And so one day I was kind of going through and I thought of Mr. Rogers. I'm a huge Mr. Rogers fan.
Same.
And so yep. have been for most of my life. And he had a number that was 143, which kind of a funny side note, he maintained 143 pounds for the majority of his adult life. But he said it, the one when he was 6'2", which I have no idea how he did, but
seems not healthy, but
yeah. But so 143 was, it takes one letter to say I, four letters to say love, and three letters to say you. So as a community, we changed that one to a two, which is we. So it takes two letters to say we. So 243 is we love you. And there's not a place in the school where you can't look up and see that. And that's kind of what we tell the students. We say, you know, if you're feeling down, don't look down, look up, and you'll see 243. And really having it on all of our shirts, all of everything that we produce has really been, it's been, you know, transformative. And I know that's kind of what Roots is in every aspect. And in that aspect, we went from having averaging seven suicide attempts a school year to we went 3 years and had one. So a huge, huge difference. And we still have, you know, every year we'll have a couple kids that'll end up getting hospitalized for suicide ideation or for just being in that place. But always they, since those first couple years, they go to an adult. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what 243 more than anything has enabled them is when they know they have a loving adult, they know they can go to somebody that's going to not judge, just say, okay, let's fix this. Let's figure this out. Let's help you. Let's get you where you need to be. They're more prone to do it. And one experience, we had a student and she ended up speaking at the graduation of the year she graduated. And she said, you know, she had a plan A, a plan B for taking her life. And then she looked up and saw 243 and she made the call to the suicide hotline. And that was a crazy experience for me because I'm in the building and I get a call and saying, hey, this is so-and-so from the suicide hotline. And you have a student in your building who's in a very bad place. And I was like, what the heck? And so she was on the phone with the student and walked me to the student and we got the student to her parents and got her where she really needed to be to get the help that she needed. And for me, I mean, that's even right there. It's like it worked, you know, it works when you create a loving environment, kids thrive.
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah,
it's just a reality. Just so it's true. A natural consequence. Going back to the natural consequences, yeah. Love, the natural consequence to love is growth.
Yeah. I was early childhood education is my background too. And I remember, you know, the whole Montessori philosophy is setting up the environment for a child to learn. So I love the idea of like setting up the environment for a child to feel loved, to feel like they can thrive, that the people around them are invested in them. And a lot of these kids, I assume, haven't always felt like that. So Dan, talk a little bit about, you know, as a board, how do you get full buy-in from the board, from the, because I understand how schools work and I know that, you know, it comes from the top, but you have to get buy-in from everybody in the building to make this environment happen. How do you do that?
So we have an incredible board. And so, and I think we're really lucky to have the people that we have on the board. This is the type of school where if you really need to be behind the mission and really get it, to even be involved with it. But there are so few people that I meet who come to the school and learn about the mission that aren't passionate about it. Right. I mean, it doesn't take too long being there to realize that there's something special about it. And the 243, you know, it's something that we have a lot of LGBTQ kids in the school, and it plays along with that. There's kids, who've had difficulties on. It's not easy anywhere, and it's sometimes really not easy here in Utah. And so I think having that 243 is just something that not just the board. I mean, really anyone who comes to the school can really – what better message can there be? And you know, especially – like you said, especially for a lot of these kids. My kids, I would say, you know, if you asked them who loves you, they could probably name 50 adults and they'd be right, who love them and express that on a regular basis to them. And so the fact that the principal of their school loves them would be like, all right, whatever. That's nice. Okay. But I think at this school, one of the things that Tyler talks about a lot is the idea that one loving adult who cares before the age of 18 can undo an enormous amount of trauma. And at Roots, there's more than just one adult. Who love, and it's not just a slogan. It's not just a, you know, something to graffiti on the walls. It's a real, you can feel it. It's palpable when you're there. And the students talk about it. And it's just one of the coolest things to hear these kids talk about how it makes them feel, how they feel about their school. Especially when you think of like traditional high schools, yeah. Right? And when they're contrasting it for them, and students sometimes will say things like, you know, I stopped going to school. Like Tyler said, these kids have dropped out, a lot of them. I stopped going to school and it seems like no one really noticed. And so I thought no one cared and then I dropped out and I proved that it seemed like no one really cared. And, you know, at Roots, we only have, you know, 200 and, you know, under 200 students. They really do know. The staff and Tyler personally knows, you know, if there's a kid who hasn't been to school in a while, Tyler knows, the staff knows, the teachers notice. There's a whole outreach team that will go out and visit the kids at home, be like, hey, time to come back to school. Huh. It's just a different vibe. So the 243 is, like I said, it's more than a slogan. It's really, it's in every aspect of everything we do. And as a board, it informs all the decisions that we make about, you know, what things need to get funded and what are the most important priorities in the school. It really, I would say also for the teachers, is one of the biggest ones. And I know that's one of your particular issues. And when you were out of the school, I think the teachers really appreciated that and understood where you were coming from. And they felt heard. You know, being a teacher is never super easy. And being a teacher or on staff in a school like this, it is not, yeah. It can be a challenge. And so that 243 is for the students and it's for the staff. And we try to make a big effort as a board to make sure that the staff also understand that they're appreciated and how important they are to this whole process. Cause it doesn't, you know, there's no school without them. And the students recognize it. The students bond with some of these teachers and staff members in ways that it's just really cool to see. Mm.
So let's talk more about your teachers. We're saying that it's really difficult environment for teachers right now. How are your teachers doing and how do you get your teachers to stay and how do you get them to feel like they have the resources and the tools they need to be able to do their jobs, which is, you know, again, something we're working on as well. But how have you been successful at keeping your teachers there and bought into the mission?
I think it gets hard. I would say it gets harder every year. Our teachers more, it's not as much what goes on in the building. It's what goes on outside the building for us. Because once they're there, you know, they feel safe. They feel loved. The teachers do. I think what's been hard in the last couple, I'd say year or two really, is that the politicizing of everything they do outside of schools. I think that has been super detrimental to kind of the morale of the teachers. But as far as, you know, every year the state does a survey about kind of safety, like, do you feel safe at work? And it's amazing how our teachers score so high on that. And I think a lot of that is 243 and is them really feeling like that they're safe, they're loved. And for me, as the principal and the leader in the building, it really is about making sure they know that I'm always there and my door is always open. I don't have an office actually, and that was for me. That was kind of important to be able to be everywhere, and be kind of walking around. Never, you know, I don't go into an office, shut the door, and that's where I'm at. And so creating that, breaking down the hierarchy and having everyone feel like their voice is heard, they're equal, I think that is more important. I mean, I could go on for hours about, I mean, we're doing a lot of things wrong to make teachers feel right. And that's frustrating as an educator.
Yeah, explain that a little bit. So that's really an interesting thought. So explain what you mean by that.
So for one, I think, you know, out of safety, what we've done is we've sanitized schools even. Mm-hmm. So you don't touch the kid. Don't say, you can't say I love you. You can't say these things. You can't say these things. And we think that makes kids safe, and it doesn't. It's not making anybody safe. When you've sanitized, you know, when there's a, as humans, we hunger for connection.
Yes.
And then you create all of these rules that impede actual connection, true mm-hmm. connection, then the kids aren't going to feel safe. And it actually, I was talking with someone from the state. I said, the big issue is you think you've made them safer, but what you've done is you've actually created an environment that is better for a predator or somebody to do something inappropriate, because now you have a whole population of kids that are hungry for positive, loving attention. No one's allowed to do it because of the rules and because of the culture that we've created. So somebody can, you know, secretly, I guess you can establish that relationship. And a kid who has high trauma is craving a loving adult. And then that person takes advantage of that system. Whereas if you create loving environments, the kids are like, why would I, you know, no, everybody loves me. Like, I don't need your false sense of love that you're trying to push down on me. Everybody loves me. I have all of these teachers I could go to. And so that's one example. I mean, to try to create a safer environment, we ruined what the beauty of what schools could be.
Wow. That is, I'm going to have to really noodle on that for a long time. That is an incredibly powerful thought about what we're doing to create safe schools. I just have never thought about that. Thank you for explaining that. That makes so much sense to me. We want to continue this conversation and see what's next for Roots, and we'll do that when we come right back. We are back here on First Lady and Friends with Dan and Tyler from Roots Charter School. We are having an incredible conversation, and my mind is just blown right now by some of the things you're saying, but I want to come back to that idea of this environment that you're creating and sort of this different environment I'm not sure how to frame this question other than how is it working? And we're talking about connections. The kids that you have are here because they need connection, and you're creating that in a very different way. How is that translating to, you know, say post-graduation? Are they entering a world where, you know, this authority dichotomy is it working for them post graduation when they are going into an environment that maybe doesn't look like what they just came from? You know, if they're a boss employee type situation, how are they integrating into a work situation or a post graduate situation? How are they doing? Are we keeping data post graduation?
So, you know, there's transitions always hard. The transition from high school to, we've created a system where the only really unbumpy road is if they go university. And even that's kind of, you don't see the bumps until they graduate with a degree in humanities and they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
But for the most part, that system really is like, it's like bowling with bumpers. They know, boom, 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 they just go straight. So trying to transition is difficult. You know, we're making some changes. We're still new. I mean, we've only been doing this for 7 years. I will say I keep in touch with most of the students. And this question is asked a lot. Okay, if you're a loving environment, how are you preparing them for the world? Because the world isn't going to treat them the way they're treated at Roots.
Right, but... Which is an unfair question because I think...
No, it's a real question.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
And so, but the reality is what we all have to do is we have to step back and say, well, what kind of world do we want?
Yeah.
Do I want to train them to say yes to a boss that treats them terrible? so that they can maintain a job. I actually don't. I want to train them and have them have the self-confidence, the connection, and know that, like, hey, actually, and do it with respect. And we work on that a lot because they don't always do that. But for them to go and say, you can't treat me, that's actually not, you can't treat me that way.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let you, you know, I know my value. I know who I am. And you can't treat me that way. I think schools, for the most part, they model the systems that the kids are going to be going into, even if those systems are broken. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why model a broken system when we have all these kids that we could train and teach and show them what the world can be and then let them go create a better world? And so for me, really, it is if I give them a loving environment where they know they're loved, that they don't have to be fearful, that they can be brave, that they can say what's on their mind, that they can think for themselves, that I don't care what they draw, you know, and not like, you know, I'm not expelling a kid because he drew a knife. Like, yeah. That's, I mean, if you think about that, how crazy some of the things we do and what message we're actually sending to this kid, that's not the world I want. And so for me, it really is, I'll give them true love, true connection, and hope that they take that with them along with their diploma. And then for me, I think if we get enough people on board with that, then we won't be having that discussion anymore. Like, are you really preparing them for how mean the world is? Yeah. Well, I don't, not by being mean to them. Like, no, I'm not. Like, I'm not going to show them. I'm not going to say, I'm going to show you what the rest of your life is going to be, and it's not good. I'm going to show them, like, here's goodness, here's kindness, here's forgiveness, here's, you know, all of these things that they need. I'm going to give it to you, and I hope that as a parent, a future parent, as somebody that's going into the world, that you'll take those things and spread it.
Yeah.
And I think that if you think about it, the problem that these kids have is not that they haven't had enough exposure to the harshness of real life.
True.
And so I think they've had plenty. And I think that's incorporated into the philosophy. And Tyler and I think both really feel strongly about this. With these kids, if you're looking for it, as they are in a lot of schools, because discipline is one of the main focuses, if you're looking for a reason to expel a kid, especially a lot of the students at our school, if that's what you're trying to do and your goal is to do that, you can probably find a good reason to expel kids if that's what your goal is. And especially kids who have had difficult lives. So the idea there is that they've had plenty of exposure to harshness. What we're trying to do is say, look, is there any way that we can keep this kid in school? Mm-hmm. Is there not, oh, you're not going to graduate. Well, that's not our goal. Is there any way we can get him to graduate? Well, we're going to have to work really hard, and they have a huge credit recovery program, and we're going to have to work with them on the behavior. Okay, if that's what it takes, let's do that. Rather than, you know, this kid had some minor something, like Tyler said, and that's a, you know, worthy of expulsion. Well, I guess so, if that's what your goal is. So we just focus in on other things.
That's an incredible thought. You know, this idea of radical kindness. I mean, it's something we've been talking about a lot. And I think these kids do have the power to change the world that we live in.
Yep.
They can make it better. I've always said the kids that we are seeing now are so much better at this than we are. They're so much better at kindness. They're so much better at accepting people for who they are than we ever were or are. And so I love the thought that we can allow them to change our world to make it better. Let's talk next steps for Roots. Right now you're under 200 students. Where would you like to be? And I guess what are the next steps, and what are maybe the barriers to what you're trying to do?
So our real next goal is to find a more permanent location. We're in a leased building on borrowed land. And so finding a permanent location, preferably in West Valley, is kind of my big push. I always want to keep, you know, if we had multiple campuses, that'd be great. But I think 200, we're not looking to grow in a single location above 200. You have to keep that number low to really be able to know the kids. But yeah, for me, the next step, and then for personally, that's roots. Personally, it's really trying to push for more trauma-informed practices statewide, really trying to take some of the things that we know work at Roots and help other schools really incorporate them. For me, we didn't copyright anything we've done. Like, we don't own love. We don't own 243, right? And so really getting teachers to understand, and going back to your initiative, it's like helping them understand that if you learn to love your students, your job becomes easier. Mm-hmm. It becomes that human experience that we want. It's not anymore that you're standing in front of a group of kids that, you know, at times do drive you crazy. It's you're standing in front of kids that you know, that you love, that you are vested in. I tell teachers all the time, like, no one who I hated ever taught me anything good. And so if you create an environment where there is that toxicity and there's that adversary, like, I'm the wise sage, do what I say, those kids, you've that's a barrier to learning. Those kids they're not going to learn. But if you establish that loving relationship, your job becomes easier. So talking about, like, you know, because it becomes restorative. Love is restorative. And when you love your students, that restores you and helps so much. And so spreading some of those things for me is really important. Roots, really, I'd say, I don't know, you can chime in, Dan, if our number one right now is probably finding that permanent location, trying to figure that out. And it's a tough environment to be trying to find a permanent location.
Yeah.
So if anybody knows of a great empty lot in a bad neighborhood, we can turn it into something beautiful. Yeah. That's my plug.
And if you're willing to have some, you know, goats and sheep and whatnot hanging around, which
it's like having a farm, but without, you don't have to do the chores. It's amazing. It's the best neighbor ever.
It's like a petting zoo next door. It's great.
Yeah. I also always put in a plug, if you are a teacher or know of teachers who this kind of a school and this kind of a program appeals to, reach out.
Yeah.
Go on the website. I think one of my big focuses, I think, for the future, besides the permanent location, is the program, seeing how it's transformed the lives of these kids. I'd love to be able to reach more kids and expand it, because I hear from people all the time, you know, friends in Bountiful or Ogden who are like, man, I wish, like, my kid really needs this. It's just too far. And so being able to take it to more places, I think, would be great. And to increase the community involvement, I just want to give a shout out to the community in Utah. It has – a small charter school is difficult. Yeah. And the community, including you and the governor who have been out to the school, but even just private companies and organizations that have just been so supportive of this of the school, of our students, of our teachers, you really can't do a charter school of this size without an enormous amount of community involvement, and to do it well requires a lot. And I've just been very touched and moved by the response of the community and how much they've contributed.
That's amazing. Well, we are just blown away by what you're doing, and you know, I should also mention that, you know, a lot of your students, besides, you know, coming from some really tough environments, you know, going back to the authority, I think you're uniquely positioned to put forth this new way of doing it, because there's a lot of people in their lives, authority figures, that have not modeled behavior that that we want to see and that is good for them. And so I love what you're doing. Also, I want to mention too that will you tell me again how many IEPs, what was the percentage?
So we're about 37% special ed.
So if you,
37% of our students have
IEPs. And to put
IEPs.
That into perspective, I think the general population is about 10%.
8 to 10% is what a traditional kind of average, where schools average. So we're, I mean, very high.
Yeah.
But I think the model itself and kind of the way we interact with the students, parents, you know, that has grown. It's grown about 5% every year. And I think, honestly, I think it'll continue to grow in that way.
And I think that's great. I honestly, I was talking to somebody the other day, a mom who has a child with an IEP, and I hope we get to a point in our system that every child has an IEP, that every child has an individual learning plan for them. And we use IEP to suggest, you know, getting special education services. But I would advocate for every child having an IEP. That means individual learning for every student, and they get, you know, what they need, which is what you guys are providing. And so I hats off to you guys. I love
Amen
what you're doing.
I love that idea.
My heart is on the farm, and so I love what you're doing. I love exposing as many children as we can to the beauties of farm life and the wonderful things that they can teach us, as well as this idea of 2-4-3 and loving people. So thank you so much for what
thank
you guys
you.
Are doing.
Thanks
for being here. Thanks. Thanks to Tyler and Dan for being with us today. You can find them at rootshigh.org. Thanks for being a friend.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.